Sports.
DSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Welcome back in third and final hour on a Monday morning. That means we're going to be turning on the light with Jack Spillane. But before we turn on the light, Jack, I got to ask you. Franks and Beans, Barry has an article up about how Franks and Beans were a Saturday night staple. Were they a staple in your house growing up?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Was it a Saturday night thing?
Saturday
or just
night.
Did you do the brown bread too?
We didn't do brown bread because nobody liked it. But my mother tried it a couple of times and nobody would eat it. But we definitely did Franks and Beans.
And how do you like to eat them?
You know, when I was a kid, I didn't like Franks and Beans that much. I liked hamburgers a lot better. And once in a while, my mother would vary it up. But now I do like them, you know, that way. Although, to me, if I'm going to have Franks, I'd rather have a hot dog with mustard and relish. And
I like to take the plate of beans, put the hot dogs on top, then I take some yellow French's mustard and just squirt it all over the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
I do that, too, if I'm having, like, because I'll do Franks and potato salad.
Yeah,
and then I'll do the same thing. I'll just squirt mustard all over all of it. I put mustard in my potato salad anyway, but I'll just add a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. I probably would do better that way because you avoid the carbs of the roll. But I love a good hot dog roll.
I mean,
especially if it's grilled.
There's carbs in the beans too. So
yeah,
you got to do what you got to do. But all right, well, it's time to turn on the light. So let's cue up the Stones.
Could I say, get high?
By the way, Jack, I was in the record store yesterday and they had the complete Rolling Stones, you know, the original mono albums all in a box that I think was like $350 though.
Wow.
So, hey, wow. Collectible vinyl is expensive.
Yeah. It's too bad I don't do vinyl because I would have paid you for those, like, you know, if I had a vinyl player, but I don't.
We'll get you one. We're going to get Jack back into vinyl.
Well, from the prices that you're quoting me just now, I don't know.
It all depends. It all depends on how high quality you need to start. You know, I get enough stuff at yard sales. I find stuff at yard sales. My receiver that I use is a 1970s Samsung receiver and has a, you know, the flip dials and all that kind of stuff and the big heavy tuner.
Yeah.
And then I have my record player right now is from the 80s. So
I have one of those Bose receivers that's about this big and it just gets everything.
The sound wave?
It has one wonderful quality. And anything that's on the internet, I can, you know, I've downloaded and I can play on that. But I don't know. It's like this big. It sounds wonderful. I don't feel like the need for anything else.
I could get all hipster on you and be like, yo, it doesn't sound the same as vinyl, man. It doesn't have that same warmth and richness to it.
Well, I'm definitely not hip, so.
All right. Well,
I would like to experiment with it in the whole Rolling Stones collection because there's a lot of stuff I've never had. Like, you know, I'd love to have that.
Well, listen, if you're gonna start cheap, just you can find those Victrolas and those Crosleys, all those little suitcase record players, but you got to be careful because some of them are terrible quality.
My grandmother's old crank phonograph. That's how old I am. My grandmother actually had one of those.
I almost bought one.
And you know, she had a piano in her house where I used to go to play the piano. And she had that Victrola, but I always asked her to play it, but she never would.
I almost bought one a few years ago. Somebody had one for sale, and they offered me a really good price on it. And I was thinking about it just to have it for my collection of old radios and things. But I'm glad I didn't do it because it would have just been sitting in a storage unit now, and nobody would have been enjoying it. So Speaking of being hip to things, you are pretty hip to what's been going on with the Inspectional Services Department. That this column that you have right now is a companion piece to the reporting of Arthur Hirsch. So let's get into exactly what Arthur was reporting first, and then we can kind of move into your analysis of it.
Yeah, so like most other people in the media, we had heard for years a lot of complaints about the building department, Inspectional Services to be precise, and the difficulty contractors, some contractors say they have in getting permits. And we never really had been able to pin that story down because most people who do business with the city and are dependent on those permits don't want to step on the tail of the tiger. And so, you know, the old cliche, you can't fight City Hall. Mm-hmm. And so finally, it came to our attention, this guy who actually had fought City Hall, and I didn't even know you could do this, took his complaints about the Inspectional Services Department in New Bedford to the state. He had six of them. That doesn't sound like that many when you consider they, you know, issue tens of thousands of permits a year. But is it tens of thousands or thousands? But thousands of permits a year. The state said that there was some validity to all of them. Although they said that there was no evidence of systemic problems, which I found hard to believe because you have six complaints. All six of them have problems, and yet you're saying that there's no systemic problems. So after Arthur wrote that story, I did a column based on my own experience, and I have had high-up sources, you know, across the spectrum in the city who have told me that they believe that New Bedford's building department was so slow in issuing permits that it was costing people thousands of dollars, delays in time, and that Fall River, which, you know, however you want to measure it, there seems to be a lot more building going on Fall River than in New Bedford, especially along that waterfront. And so, you know, that gave me an opportunity to bring those people to the fore because they don't want to be public either. And so the city says that they don't, you know, that they're looking into it. They have gone to a online system. And the numbers have increased from 2019, I think, to 2023, where they've about doubled their numbers of permits that they're processing. But for a long time, they clearly were not processing permits that quickly. And now, New Bedford is a big, densely developed city. You know, things like safety requirements for electrical and wiring and the fire hazards that are related to that, things like, you know, plumbing have to be done right because of the methane gas and different issues that you can have. And so, you know, we have permits requirements for a good reason, but you want the system to be friendly and practical and reasonable. And people were claiming that it wasn't. Now, some of that might be that the contractors just don't want to have anything delaying them and they want to do what they want to do and they don't want to be delayed at all. It seems to me like there are two extremes. You can be very lax or you can be, you know, nitpicky about everything. And whatever the reason, and the other aspect of it is, are you friendly and helpful when people approach you, or are you very officious and condescending to people that come to the city for help for what they're trying to achieve? Are you trying to help them realize their goal, or are you just an impediment that doesn't care? And so I think all those things need to be looked at. Ward 6 Councilor Ryan Pereira has said that he's going to bring it before the Ordinance Committee, and we'll see how it goes. Ryan's family, you know, extended family, owns a lot of property in the city, so they would be dealing with the building department frequently. So they probably have their own perspective on the problem. I'm not saying that Ryan only represents their interests, but that's, you know, I think it should be put out there. But there are
And professionally, he's in the home improvement industry,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but there are just a lot of complaints about the New Bedford Building Department. So we're going to do a little more deeper dive to see how justified they are.
Well, one thing that popped into my head, and you can tell me if I'm off base on this, but when you were saying how you don't understand how they didn't see that there were systemic problems, the state didn't see how there were systemic problems, my thought was, well, that's because they've only heard complaints from one person, that they need more people if they are having issues to bring that to that same level. And then maybe they can say that.
Yeah, I found that to be kind of a suspicious line. So they examined six complaints. They find validity in all six of them.
But six complaints all from the same developer.
Yeah, and then they say, we don't see any evidence of systemic problems. How do they know that there's systemic problems based on just six complaints from one developer? How can they even make that...
Well, they're saying that based on those six complaints, they're not seeing systemic problems. They're not seeing evidence. They need more people to come forward.
If you have a culture of not trying to help people and being unfriendly and not trying to figure out, not putting things in writing, which is one of the things they found in the six complaints, not communicating well, is that systemic or is that cultural? What difference does it make? You know, it's a problem with the department. And so, you know, we're going to find out, I think, when they have those hearings, I hope developers and contractors will come forward. Some have written to us, but they want to be anonymous. And it's, you know, we do what we can with anonymous sources, but you only can go so far with anonymous sources. Right. Like, you know.
And certainly that's not going to help in a public meeting to be anonymous.
Yes. And also, I think what you really need, I mean, if the city is going to dig in and not acknowledge that there's a problem, then you're going to have to get some sort of big data collection, and that is hard. You know, I mean, New Bedford Light probably does more data retrievals than anybody locally, and even we are limited in our resources, and a lot of it is public records requests, which can take months to work their way because the city denies them frequently and makes it difficult to get them. Or delays them probably is the most accurate way of putting it. But so we'll see. I think that anybody who has been around New Bedford politics or has been a contractor in New Bedford has heard these complaints.
You also put forth the argument that, you know, when people say, well, Fall River is a lot more friendly to these businesses, you also bring forth the possibility that is it friendlier or is it that they're just more lax?
Yeah.
And so...
So, I mean, certainly in its zoning, Fall River is not an impressive place. The zoning in that city is so chaotic and haphazard. I always get lost. The commercial sectors are marbled in with the residential sectors, and it's just not a very aesthetically pleasing place in a lot of respects. Lots of it. You know, I mean, there is the main drag that is nice. But, you know, Fall River development seems a little bit... chaotic. Now that may be different than building permits and all of that, but anecdotally, that's what people think. People think Fall River has a better reputation for being friendly to permitting than New Bedford does. Now, is that because they're lax, or you know, just letting everything through, or is it because New Bedford is too rigid in their administration? I don't know. Is there a happy medium? The towns seem to have less complaints than the cities, but the towns have not as diverse a population and a development that is not as thick. And so, you know, you have to be very careful with some of these codes in a very densely developed place like New Bedford or Fall River, I think.
And a town might be dealing with, you know, obviously less requests, so they can put more time in on working one-on-one with that developer.
The way that Massachusetts is organized between the cities and towns, to me, is a throwback to the colonial eras when, you know, the cities weren't as big and towns weren't as sprawling as they are now. You know, if you go to other parts of the country, it's much more county government that administers things, and I think it's a more regional approach that works better. Massachusetts has tried to go to regional things on some things, but invariably the suburbs fight it tooth and nail because they view it as a transfer of money and resources to the cities. You know, that's true with the education system in Massachusetts. But the biggest transfer of wealth is really from the cities to the towns, in my opinion, is because a lot of the people in the suburbs work in the cities. And unlike someplace like New York City, they don't get taxed for coming into New Bedford or Fall River to work. You know, the urban tax base in the old mills collapsed 30, 40 years ago and has been nothing but downhill since then. They have, I mean, if you did not have state subsidies, which basically means people in the suburbs who are more affluent subsidizing the New Bedford and all the gateway cities' educational systems, you would not even be able to run anything near to an adequate school system, public school system anymore. That's how poor the cities have gotten. And I think the suburbs think that they're home free. It's a pet peeve of mine, but they're not. They have to contribute to the city's well-being, or else they're going to become places of such dysfunction that it's going to come out and bite you, whether through violence or crime or whatever.
Why don't we take a break here? When we come back, we can take your calls, 508-996-0500, or you can also send app chat messages as well. But we'll be back with more with Jack Spillane in just a few moments. All right, welcome back in. We are turning on the light with Jack Spillane. Jack, one question that people, or one comment people make when it comes to the development in the city and why there might be some of these delays is you hear the conspiracy theorists that will call in and say, well, that's because if it's something that the mayor wants, that the city wants to have happen, those people have an easier path than the people that they don't want, that they throw up these roadblocks so that they can kind of cherry pick what type of development comes into the city. Have you seen any evidence of that?
I have not, and I would be careful about throwing around that kind of accusation without any evidence. I know at least one very well-connected developer that still felt that things were very slow in the city. So I don't know. I think that certainly, you know, if the mayor picks up the phone and says that this is a priority, it's going to be a priority. But we've all seen state or city projects that have been slow too. I just think it has a reputation, the New Bedford Building Department does, and they need to do an in-depth investigation because, you know, is the reputation deserved or is it not? You know,
I think that reputation causes speculation and then conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that we can discuss, too, we will talk about before the end of the hour, is the MBTA, the commuter rail. And obviously, with that coming in and that starting, we'll talk about that coming up when it's actually going to start. But that's probably got a lot of people eyeing this area. And would they move on if they feel like the possible development is being held up? Would they say, well, I'm interested in coming to the city because of the commuter rail. Oh, but now I'm hearing all this stuff about holdups. Never mind. We'll just go to a different community that has commuter rail.
Maybe. Greater Boston has become so expensive to live in that people have literally been priced out. You know, their kids cannot live in the same community as their parents. They have to move someplace else, even if they're going to work in Greater Boston. If New Bedford and Fall River and Taunton are held up, where are they going to go? I mean, Worcester needs improvements to their line. They're trying to get improvements. They're trying to build a railroad, a passenger train through Springfield to Western Mass, but that's a long ways to go to work in Boston. They've talked for years about extending the train to Lynn from Revere, where it stops now, to not the train. The train does go to Lynn, the subway to Lynn. There aren't that many options, really. New Bedford and Fall River are kind of like the last great affordable option in Eastern Mass. And even they are somewhat far in terms of distance to getting to Boston in less than an hour 15 minutes. You know, this train is supposed to go an hour and a half to get to Boston. So, you know, I don't know. I think people are very skeptical about commuter rail in general. And there's been so many delays over the years, and you know, now we have an alternative route that is not a direct route. They still haven't solved the problem of the backup and storage of trains in Boston. Massachusetts transportation system, really, no one would say it's a well-run contemporary transportation system the way you have in Europe or China. It's really just embarrassing that American governments have not been able to. We are so in love with the car, and have been for so long, that we've just never been able to get mass transit right in this country. It costs money. You know, it's not going to be cheap. That's why they have higher taxes in other parts of the world. But we can't. The highway systems are in gridlock. We have to solve mass transit.
All right. Well, we are going to go now into the newsroom and get all the headlines of the day from Phil Dev. When we come back, we can talk more about the MBTA. We'll also take your calls at 508-996-0500. And we will also take your app chat messages on the WBSM app. But right now, let's go into the newsroom and get all the headlines from Phil.
Donald Trump's hush money trial begins in New York. A Biden phone call stops Israeli retaliation. And the price of stamps could go up again.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Donald Trump could face jail time if he's convicted in his New York hush money trial, Tammy Trujillo reports.
Each of the 34 charges against the former president is a Class E felony, which carries a maximum prison sentence of 4 years upon conviction. If Trump is found guilty on all or some of the criminal counts, it will be up to the jury to decide how he'll be punished. Many legal experts, however, believe jail time would be unlikely in the case. A guilty verdict would also not bar Trump from continuing his bid for the presidency. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
A 9-year-old girl is dead and 10 others injured after a shooting at a family gathering in Chicago. Police responded to a call on the city's southwest side late Saturday night after over a dozen gunshots were reported and found several shooting victims at a family gathering. Authorities said at the time that it appeared to have been a targeted shooting. Mayor Brandon Johnson called the incident a heinous and cowardly act of wanton violence. No word on arrests yet. A phone call between President Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reportedly played a role in Israel deciding not to retaliate for Saturday's large-scale drone attack by Iran. The New York Times cited U.S. officials that Israel was planning to retaliate early Sunday morning. Biden had reportedly told Netanyahu that Israel should count it as a win after intercepting most of the 300-plus drones and missiles Iran launched. Rust armorer Hannah Gutierrez is set to be sentenced today. Gutierrez faces 18 months in prison for negligence in loading the live ammo into Alec Baldwin's gun on set, causing the death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. Baldwin has also been charged with involuntary manslaughter in Hutchins' death and is scheduled to head to trial in July. The world's oldest conjoined twins have passed away. Michael Kastner with more.
Lori and George Chappelle died at the hospital of the University of Pennsylvania on April 7th. George, who had identified as male for the past 17 years, and his sister were joined at their foreheads. Their obituaries say George performed as a country music singer. His sister Lori had her own interests, including being an accomplished bowler. No word yet on the cause of death. I'm Michael Kastner.
Procrastinators are almost out of time to file their annual tax returns. IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel offers this advice.
I'd like to tell taxpayers, don't panic and come to IRS for help. That's what we're set up for.
Commissioner Werfel says the extension only gives you more time to file, not more time to pay any balance due to Uncle Sam. Werfel says the extension form will help you estimate how much tax you owe so you won't face any penalties. Due to the holiday, Massachusetts residents have until the 17th to file their returns. And the U.S. Postal Service is asking for approval to raise the price of stamps for the second time in 6 months. If the change gets the green light, a first-class stamp will jump from 68 cents to 73 cents in July.
WBSM Sports.
Well, the Boston Marathon is the big story today, kicking off shortly in Hopkinton. And while that's underway, the Red Sox will host the Cleveland Guardians at Fenway Park for a game just after 11 this morning. The Bruins visit the Washington Capitals tonight. And in case you missed it, the Celtics wrapped up the regular season with a 132-122 win over the Washington Wizards at TD Garden. Boston now finishing as the top team in the NBA with a record of 64-18.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Starting off this week with partly cloudy skies this morning, temperature around 50. As we head into the afternoon, lower 60s, mostly sunny skies. If you're planning to head into the Boston area for the marathon, mostly sunny skies, topping out in the mid 60s this afternoon. This morning, in the upper 40s to upper 50s with mostly sunny skies. Locally, overnight, mostly clear in the mid-40s. Tomorrow, sunshine, lower 60s. Be sure to watch ABC 6 for my full 7-day forecast. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Ceci del Carmen on New Bedford's News Talk Station, 1420 WBSM.
I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
Do you remember where that music is from?
I wasn't paying that much attention.
I'll play it one more time and you can see if you recognize it.
Hawaii 5-0?
A CBS special presentation.
Really?
Did you get to see that CBS special presentation last night, Billy Joel?
I did not.
Oh, it was very good. It's probably going to be on demand, but they did his 100th show at Madison Square Garden as part of his residency.
Uh-huh.
They filmed it back in March, and then they aired it last night. And man, he still sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I watched this British documentary on Mr. Bates in the post office. They had a big post office corruption scandal in in Britain the last 20 years where they basically tried to bankrupt all these small town post office masters because they had a computer system that didn't work. Great.
You know, I have one funny British post office story. When my son was younger, he was born in 2004. So when he was like a year or two old or whatever, he had this show that he liked on TV on Nick Jr. called Tiny Planets. And it had these two characters, Bing and Bong. And it was like the most, you know, it's made for two-year-olds. And he would like, like, you know, whatever. We just had it on in the background because we didn't want to put things on that were bad for him. So we would watch kid shows. But he loved these Bing and Bong characters. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to order him for Christmas or his birthday or whatever. I'm going to order him Bing and Bong. And so I go online, and the only place you can get them from is the UK. And this was 2004, 5, whatever. So we're just a few years after 9/11. What a pain it was to order stuffed animals from overseas.
Really?
Yes, because they're so worried about them being stuffed with niacin or what was the other one? Anthrax or any of that stuff. So ricin. I'm naming like ingredients to like vitamins and stuff. Yeah, it had to go through this whole process where it you could track it, but you could see like it's sitting in a facility, and it's because they were waiting for it to be examined before we could finally get it. And by the time we got it, like they were all like they'd been
torn apart.
Not torn apart, but like you could tell they'd been bent and like bent every which way and everything. So I mean, it was fine. We just took them out of the box and they were okay. But it was you could just tell like somebody had been you know handling them quite a bit. So yeah. Anyway. So getting back to the MBTA, one thing that I don't understand is people are so quick to jump on, and you mentioned it before, the fact that it's going to be an hour and a half ride from New Bedford to Boston. And if you are taking the train as a commuter, how long do you think you're spending in the car driving from New Bedford to Boston if you're going at a time when there's traffic? You're probably spending 90 minutes in the car.
Well, yeah, but you're still going to be... I mean, the car is on a heavy traffic day is easily 90 minutes. And every day is a heavy traffic day now. Like, you know, this even around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I've noticed that the Southeast Expressway is getting crowded. I don't know what the solution is. As I said earlier, I think Massachusetts is in gridlock on the highways. The MBTA system doesn't work very well. We've got to get serious. We've got to grow up. And, you know, transportation is a serious problem in a highly developed, densely populated part of the world. You have to have good transportation systems, and we don't. And if we think we're going to compete with China and Europe, where they do, you know, in the future, when nobody can... Maybe nobody will need to go anywhere anymore because we'll all work in our homes. But, jeepers, you might want to go someplace when you visit your relatives on holidays or...
They said the same thing, that, you know, traffic should lighten up when people go back to work because there'd be so many people working remotely, and look, it's just as bad as it ever was.
And half the people still haven't gone back to work. I mean, they say a lot of the Boston offices are empty because people never went back to work after the pandemic. They just kept working from home. I never went back to an office. I worked in an office every day of my whole career until the pandemic, and now we have an office at the New Bedford Light, and I go into it maybe once a week. But I don't go in every day.
The other part of, you know, the commuter rail is that you'll be able to, you know, you can do things while you're on the train as opposed to if you're in the car. I mean, I know people still do things in the car when they're stuck in traffic anyway, but, you know, you can pull out your laptop and do some work. You can watch a movie. You can read a book. You can take a nap. You have a lot more. You're gaining some time in your day to do something, whether for yourself or to get a head start on some work. So I just don't see the 90 minutes as such a big impediment as other people look at it as.
Yeah, I think it's comparative because they had expected that when they first started talking about a train through the Stoughton route, which is the direct route that goes through the Hockomock Swamp, that it was only going to take an hour and 10 minutes, an hour and 5 minutes, and that would be an easy commute. I will say that an hour and a half to get to Boston, that brings you to South Station. Most people in Boston don't work at South Station. You still have to get on the subway and go to the Back Bay, go to the downtown, go to Cambridge, wherever it is you're going. You still may have another 15, 20 minutes after that hour and a half. You know, I mean, whereas if you drive, you're probably driving directly to a garage or whatever near where you work. So
you know, even the infrastructure in Boston, they never connected the North Station and the South Station. It's one of the only cities in the country.
I still don't get that.
Where they didn't connect it. Well, it was going to be ledge and it was going to be expensive to do. And they should have done it when they did the big dig because everything would have been
right,
dug up.
Right there. They made the greenway instead.
It was going to add something like $1 billion to the project, which is already way over budget. But not doing that has been a real problem because there's no place to store the cars now. So that limits how many cars you can bring in from the south and the west and the north and every place else. And if you need to get to other parts of Boston because you don't really work right at the South Station, you're stuck. You know, and there's no easy way to go right through to the north. You might have a reason that I want to go to Salem, you know, or whatever. And no, you have to get off the train and then take the subway to the North Station and then get on the train again to Salem. So it's just not planned out well. It's not built well. It's not efficient. Boston had the first underground subway in the country, I think, even before New York. Mm-hmm. But it really has fallen behind. And the best minds now for 20 years, Governor Baker, Governor Dukakis, the present people, they hired this guy, Philip Eng, from New York. They thought he was going to be the best guy, and he's had all the same problems. The MBTA union seems to be totally out of control. It's just, tell me I'm wrong. Does transportation, never mind public transportation, does transportation in general on the highways and everything work in eastern Massachusetts? I don't think it does.
There's, just as a side note, there's a great episode of The American Experience that looks at the creation of the Boston subway. It's fascinating to see the way that they put that in. And it's just like how my mind is blown when I learn about all of the other, like, no longer used subway lines in New York City that are under the ones that people use now. I'm like, this is just crazy that there's so many of those. But the other part of it is, let me just put this call on hold. The other part of it is that this commuter rail isn't going to be just for people that are commuting. And I've seen some of the information that the MBTA is putting out there for what they want people to be able to utilize this line for. And it's about more than just getting to Boston to go to work. You know, it's something that a family can jump on the train on a Saturday. You go down to the library, you get your free passes to the Museum of Science, you get your free passes to the aquarium, you take the train and you go in, and you're able to go and do all these things on far less than if you had to park in each of these garages going from one place to the next. But you brought up the main impetus to all of that is, but if South Station and North Station don't connect, then how are you going to get around?
Well, there are subway connections, but still, say that you want to take your family to the Museum of Science.
But that's an extra ride you're going to take.
Museum of Science, you know, you go into South Station, then you're going to have to get on. I'm trying to think of what line goes to the Museum of Science. It may be the Green Line. The Green Line that goes out toward Medford, I think, goes near there. At least you can get to North Station, which is right across the river from... You know, you may have to take a cab to the Museum of Science. So that's one stop to another stop to another stop. You're talking about a 2-hour minimum to get to the Museum of Science.
If you get out at North Station, it's just a couple of blocks walk to the Museum of Science from there.
Yeah, but the train from the south is not going to go to North Station.
Right. That's what I mean, though. If you were getting there, it'd be a lot easier. And somebody that I know that was coming from here trying to go to Salem on the train to get to one of the conventions we did up there said, why doesn't the train go into North Station? I'm like, I don't know why it doesn't.
Because they didn't spend the money. And so that was, it's just poor planning. You know, like most of us, people will explain to us, you can spend it now or you can spend it later when it's going to be more expensive.
But as this person pointed out, I could stand out front of South Station and probably spit and hit North Station.
It's not quite that close.
But it's not that far of a distance to be able to connect the two or to be able to, you know, bypass it and go to the next one.
Yeah, sometimes when I go to Boston, I get off at South Station, I just walk to where I want to go. Like, at one point I was going to Mass General a lot for some health issues, and I would just walk up there because, you know, just getting on and trying to get to the red line and get over there and waiting for that. Just, if it was a nice day, I would just walk over. But we haven't, I don't think we're on top of it.
Well, let's take a call here before I got to take a break. Good morning. You're on with Jack Spillane. Hello.
Yeah. Red line at South Station, get off at Downtown Crossing, go down one level, get on the Green Line and shoot over. And I did that for a long time when I was doing security up in Boston, which is not far from North Station. If I get a little extra time, I do the walk. Did either one of you guys see the articles last week? There's a big move going on in Boston right now They actually want to slow down the overall traffic within the city by 5 to 10 miles an hour because of all the pedestrian accidents and people getting killed.
No, like within the city itself?
Within the city. They want to slow down everywhere, every single street, 5 to 10 miles an hour.
When has anybody ever gotten over 10 miles an hour on a Boston street?
But they're going to drop it, the actual posted, because a lot of pedestrian accidents.
There's lots of streets in Boston that people go faster when they can, you know, different neighborhoods and
I'm always stuck in gridlock.
Yeah. I mean, speeding in inner cities is a real problem. I live downtown.
You're stuck in neutral most times, Tim.
True.
Yeah, you know, people that come off the Octopus, for instance, in New Bedford.
Thanks, Phil.
Going down 6th Street. I think it's 6th Street. They come tearing out by City Hall, you know, at that stretch that goes by the post office and then past City Hall down toward Union Street. People just tear out, you know, I mean, 30, 40 miles an hour because it's a broad road. And, you know, I think they should have built an island in there years ago or something. But there's plenty of people speeding in city streets. But, you know, I don't know. If they have to slow down the traffic in Boston, that's just one more example of you ought to have better public transportation.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to take a break here. We'll be back in just a few moments. If you are looking for work or maybe just looking for some extra money, maybe you are retired or maybe you are trying to find something you can do around the kids' schedule with school and everything, Trembly Bus is looking for bus drivers. They're looking for van drivers. They're looking for monitors who ride on those vehicles with the kids. And it's a really great system that they have set up there because, you know, instead of just having people come in that already have CDLs to be able to drive these buses and vans, you don't have to worry about that. They will train you. If you want to work, if you want to work for them, they will train you so that you can get your CDL and work for them. It's a great way to earn some money while supporting local students. So if you would like to find out more, you can go to tbcbus.com, TBC for Trembly Bus Company, tbcbus.com, and you can find out all the information. You can apply, and hopefully you'll be the next bus driver or van driver or monitor for Trembly Bus Company. So check it out, tbcbus.com. All right, I got to take one final break here. We'll be right back. And welcome back in the final few moments here as we're turning on the light with Jack Spillane. First of all, congratulations to Linda Noss. You are the winner of today's pair of tickets to the comedy fundraiser that benefits Mercy Meals and More that's happening April 26th. Get details and enter to win tickets yourself at WBSM.com and on the app. Jack, in the final moment that we have here, what are you working on this week?
I'm not sure. That's the truth. Like, you know, I'm kind of winging it. We'll see. There's a lot of stuff happening with the Downtown Improvement District and other things that going on around town with the school system that I'm still looking at.
All right, well,
I can't really give you an answer because I don't have one.
Normally he's being secretive about it. Today he's saying,
the truth is I haven't thought of it.
It's only Monday, Tim. Leave me alone. It's not due yet. Well, we'll have you back on next Monday to talk about whatever it is that you write about and, of course, all the things that are going on in the city. Stay tuned for South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. He'll also have coming up after the 9 o'clock hour, he'll have your next cash code to try to win cash, brought to you by Architect Managed IT Services. A code every hour between now and 5 through the 5 p.m. hour. And each time you hear it, enter it to win at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app. Each hour we're giving away $100, and then each entry will get you an entry into the grand prize.